No, I'm sorry, I just read Louis the 16th was not a cat person. Although he was generally a fair and gentle man, Louis the 16th did bear some hatred in his heart for one particular race of creatures, cats.
My God, yeah, that was evidence enough. If I was a peasant in during the French Revolution, that would have been enough for me. This man doesn't like cats.
His like number one hobby besides doing like woodwork was shooting cats.
Oh my God. Oh, yeah, I get it now. Straight to the guillotine, sir.
And welcome back to this episode of Pacific Cast. I am one of your co-hosts, Lycan Forster.
And I am the better and more funny and a lot better looking co-host, Catherine McClary, or Katie. Just call me Kate. I'm so sorry that I put Catherine in there.
Yeah, she's really gonna carry the episode, as you'll see.
Obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Honestly, just honestly.
It's really unfortunate that she has to be friends with me, just
I
complete
really.
lack of comedic skills. Okay, well, today I, the inferior Lycan and the superior
Facts.
Katie, yeah,
Facts.
are going to be talking about the French Revolution, which is something we've both been kind of disgustingly interested in since 10th grade. So,
Really, just an AP world when the French Revolution came around, we were like, hey, you know what?
this is our time to shine.
He's spitting. He's spitting right now. Robespierre, he's spitting.
Then
He
he
wasn't
wasn't
really
spitting,
spitting,
but we'll
though.
get to that,
Yeah.
though. So a little disclaimer before we get right into it is Katie and I are not experts on the French Revolution, however much we'd like to be. We're just regular high schoolers, just like you. We're just like you. So yeah, we're not experts, but we just really paid attention during that one unit in 10th grade, and we've done some research leading up to this episode. And all of that research will be linked in the description of this video if you'd like to go and discover the facts more accurately for yourselves.
Okay, let's get right into it. The French Revolution. It starts officially in 1789.
But we're going to want to start a little bit earlier and set up kind of the historical period that France was in at that point. The most important thing you have to understand is the social order, which we now call the Old Regime France, split into three estates. So in the first estate, we have the clergy. In the second estate, we have the nobility. And in the third estate, we have the peasants. There's a huge disparity between all of these different groups of people. The nobles and the clergy only account for 3% of the population, but they own 30% of the land and they pay virtually no taxes.
Yeah, seems about fair.
Yeah, no reason for alarm. Just some good old-fashioned, eating the rich. Frenchies
Facts.
were the OGs on that one.
French.
So then we have the third estate, which accounts for 97% of the population, but they don't really own land. They don't really have a say in their governance, which, as I'm sure we're all aware, is a monarchy. About 80% of the third estate pays half of their income every year to basically everyone else, the nobles, the clergy, paid in taxes. Beyond just this huge wealth disparity, we have a really terrible economy leading up to the French Revolution. Kings have really mismanaged France's money, and there have been really bad harvests, which lead to grain shortages. At the time of the revolution, the average Frenchman ate 3 pounds of bread a day. Like, that was their main source of, I don't know, energy. That was their main staple in their diet was bread, and a lot of
See,
it.
at first when I read this, I thought, yeah, I mean, 3 pounds of bread seems like a lot, but like, no, it's just they just ate, like that was it, bread, like that it was like the Irish and their potatoes, right? That, and then you know how like
Yeah, so bread prices doubled, and peasants were like, ouch, this is gonna hurt.
And this is actually where that kind of myth about Marie Antoinette originates, her infamous saying, let them eat cake, when her advisors come to her and say, you know, Marie, the villagers are starving, there's no more bread, they're asking for bread. And Marie says, no bread, let them eat cake. Which is something that she actually did not say, possibly something like it, but not that exactly.
It's kind of funny how, like, in history, like, something that you didn't even say could be, you know, portrayed as your biggest accomplishment, you know what I mean? It's funny, too, because, like, how they, the French people, I mean, the peasants, like, how they saw Mary, for things that we'll go on later, talk about later, was, like, a big reason as to why let them eat cake was, like, why that became her main thing, even though she didn't even say it. You know what I mean? I think that that's really interesting.
I totally agree. There are a lot of examples of that. Yeah. Okay, so another thing that's coming around before the French Revolution is the Enlightenment, which is this growing intellectual movement in Europe from the mid to late 1700s.
Which was a questioning of religion and divine right, which was the thing that kept so many monarchs on European thrones. It pushed forward science, and it spoke out particularly for equality and liberty and democracy, all those good things, which made it easier for the peasants to revolt, because before that, they didn't like what was going on, but the king had a divine right to rule. If they were going against the king, they were going against God, so the Enlightenment enabled them to kind of look past that and say, hey, no, maybe the king is just not a very good guy.
Another thing we have going on is the American Revolution, which Louis XVI entered into.
Everyone told him, hey, don't do this. Don't help out the Americans. Don't fight for their independence. You're not going to want to do it.
And not he was a good like, idea.
No, I'm going to do it.
It's got to happen.
Yeah, it's got to happen. So some context for kind of the situation with the three countries, France, Britain, and I guess it wasn't a country yet, but the colonists in America. In 1763, about 20, 30 years earlier, France and Britain had fought against each other, and France had lost everything. Canada, sugar colonies in the West Indies, a leading role in India, lost their navy, and a lot of diplomatic prestige. And they went into a lot of debt because of the war effort.
So, from this backstory, you might think that Louis entered the war to get back at Britain, which is true, but not so much for the colonies or anything like that. It wasn't to help Britain's colonies be free. He cared very little about American independence, and it really wasn't that he was in this huge rivalry with Britain. He loved England. He loved the English. He learned English at a very young age, much to the disapproval of his parents. He read debates in both houses of parliament. He translated Richard III into his own language. What he really cared about was regaining that naval power. He was transfixed with the ocean and ships, and at this point, Britain was kind of a ruler of the seas, and he thought this was grossly tyrannical.
Of course, the other ramifications were going to come out of joining this other revolution, and everyone told him so. His finance minister said, hey, dude, we really don't have enough money to get into a war right now. We should not be doing that. And he was like, but I want to. And then his wife, Marie Antoinette, was like, hey, so don't you think that if we help out this other country to get democracy, get rid of a monarch, you know, people in our own country will be like, hey, let's do that. Clearly our king supports getting rid of a king and getting democracy. let's do that. Let's do what the Americans did. And Louis was like, eh, but let me raise you this. We could get ships.
I see where he was coming from.
Katie. So he did it against everyone's better judgment, and what everyone said would happen did happen. France went completely, almost bankrupt, and people in France were like, hey, we like that. We like that revolution you did. Let's do one over here. Let's do a act two, part two. And Louis was like, wait, don't do that. Okay, do you want to maybe explain King Louis and Marie Antoinette a little bit?
All right, so basically, this is what I find really interesting, because the idea that I can know someone's relationship, like, what, 300 years ago? And the relationship is so funny, too. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's like drama, but like 300 years ago and in monarchs. Like, it's so great. And, okay, so basically, what happened is that Louis the 16th was the second son. He was the second pick to be the king. And his whole life, he was kind of a shut-in, didn't really, he was just second pick for his older brother, who actually died at a young age. And because of that, his grandfather, who was a great king, pretty much just kind of, bullied him, I guess you'd say. But Louis never wanted to be the king in the first place. He wanted to be, his hobbies included like woodwork and stuff like that. And he was so, socially awkward that he just didn't have what it took to be a king. But what it took to be a king at the time was just your blood, basically. And he had that. He was also majorly ugly and really insecure about it, which is kind of relatable. Like, hey, I get it, Louis XVI. Which is like a big reason as to why the consummation of their marriage, it took them 7 years before they actually had a kid. And basically, there's a lot of, when they first met, Marie Antoinette was married to Louis, and she was an Austrian princess, and so they were married because Austria and France, they didn't really like each other, so that's why they were married. And she was 14 and he was 15, and basically you could imagine how big the wedding was. It was huge. 200,000 people were there. Not there, but they watched the firework display, and then they, consummated their marriage. And the think is the weirdest thing.
I think we should explain this a little bit, because what happened after royal weddings was,
that's what I was just about to say. Okay. The weirdest European thing I think I have ever heard, which is, how do I say this? Basically, after they got married, they blessed the bed. The priest blessed the bed, and then they got all the important people in there, and they're like, all right, now do the thing. Do it. Do the thing. And they're like, 14.
That's my thing. Like, okay, Marie Antoinette, big spender, ruined people's lives, took from the people, but how difficult must it have been to go to a completely new place at 14? And she was promised to marry Louis at like 11. They got engaged when they were like 11. And she never met this guy who turned out to be really ugly. She gets married to him at 14 with like the looming knowledge that she would become the queen of this country that she didn't really know and probably didn't care about very much. Like, that just seems not like a great childhood end off, I don't know. Doesn't excuse how out of touch she was, and but I don't know. I think it's more of an explanation.
What makes it worse was for the years they didn't have any kids or was unconsummated, which
I believe like consummated is when they have sex for the first time and that like seals the marriage. But I think what happened was Louis was like not into it and she was like, okay.
Yeah, pretty
that
much.
That was the
yeah.
other thing that I kind of want to argue for in favor of Marie Antoinette was that a lot of the things that she was blamed for were all stuff that her husband did wrong. Like, not at all her fault. Like, the consummation of their marriage.
It says that she was interested in doing that, but he was just not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
I think the thing that really got Katie and I in AP World was we watched a movie to kind of end off that unit. And we'll link it in the description. But it described how Louis couldn't consummate his marriage because he had this disorder that whenever he got aroused, it hurt. And he refused to have this procedure that would make it not hurt. So for like a really long time after their marriage, they just didn't do anything and they didn't have any kids because of that.
You could imagine. Another thing, sorry, but you could imagine, like, just to top off the childhood trauma, her mom sent in her brother to find out what the problem was as to why they were getting unconsummated. Yes, you heard that right. Her brother.
Oh my god.
And then
god.
Her brother
who was
like,
the king of Austria. Like, okay, we'll get into that. Yeah.
And then her brother was like, ah, man, I don't know. They're just like really awkward. But then the weirdest thing is that after his talk, the couple sent him a thank you letter and then they had four kids. So it's like, I don't know like what is happening with the brother thing, but it's weird. And another thing is that because she couldn't have kids or because it went unconsummated for so long, the she was portrayed in the media in such a horrible way. Just crazy character assassination. And she was fond of children. She really liked children and she adopted a lot of children. Gave money to charity, did all that sort of stuff. But basically, the attacks on her husband led to attacks on her. And basically, they thought that she was... her love life was not just her husband, and that they thought that she was sleeping with her brother-in-law, generals of the army, her son, and most convincingly, there was this stigma that went around that Austrian women were inclined towards being lesbians. So her closest friend, Princess de... she was scouted to be a lesbian, like the queen's lesbian lover, and she was marched into these streets and attacked by a violent mob. And some people say that she suffered mutilation and sexual violation, but wow. What is the truth is that she was definitely beaten and beheaded, and her head was stuck on a pike, and she was marched around Paris. And especially in the place where Marie Antoinette was imprisoned, and they made sure that she'd be able to see her friend's, you know, head. So that was a big, yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. So,
but basically, yeah, he couldn't get it up. She couldn't have kids. When she did have kids, they're like, all right, you're screwing your son because your husband doesn't have intercourse with you. And yeah, she spent a lot of money on just flowers and chocolates. And she was like obsessed with it, but I don't think she deserved.
Yeah. Don't know. I feel like given how awful her life was, I don't know, maybe I would be buying a lot of dresses if my husband like didn't. Yeah. So I think something we want to double back to with the whole kids thing is like it definitely wasn't a good look for them not to be having kids, because the whole thing was that once you have a kid, you're dynasty. Basically that means if you have the queen wanted to have a male son as soon as possible after getting married so that there was an heir to the throne and the great Louis lineage could
just in case
extend
the,
on
you know the king dies, always gotta make sure there's the bloodline still going, you know?
Yeah, and then when she finally did have her first kid, it was a girl, and everyone was like, oh, okay, listen, lady. Yeah, and her first kid was actually the only one that survived into, like, that lived past the two of their parents, so I think that's really interesting. So it completely wasn't her fault that she wasn't having kids, but of course, in the eyes of the public, everyone was like, yeah, it's Marie's fault. Marie again.
Princess.
Not getting pregnant. And of course, the added hatred of her because she was foreign and because the whole marriage was to unite Austria and France, which weren't on good terms. But if the Austrian princess can't produce a heir for the French throne, then it's not a very successful diplomatic marriage. Ah. Okay, so that might probably be the longest segment that we hover over, because that's really what interested us, because it's interesting stuff. So now we can finally get into almost the start of the actual revolution. So basically, France is bankrupt at this point, and bankers stop giving Louis money, and he's like, oh no. So he is forced to call a meeting of the Estates General, which is kind of what you would think it is. It's a meeting of all three estates or representatives from all three estates to discuss the financial issues. And that's on the 5th of May in 1789. So the meeting doesn't go too well. They can't really come to a consensus. And the third estate is especially upset by this because, of course, they're the ones who are starving. They're the ones who are really suffering because of this financial crisis. And they're being heavily underrepresented because the body was made up of first estate, second estate, third estate, meaning that anything that the third estate voted on, they could easily be outnumbered by the first estate and the second estate, who obviously weren't going to be voting in the peasantry's interests. So, I mean, just for another example, it would be like if you had two nobles, two members of the clergy, and then two members of the third estate voting, just to kind of visualize it for you, you know. So the third estate walked away really upset from this meeting. They're like, we got to do something about this. So they go next door to what is actually a tennis court, and they form the National Assembly, which is the first of many revolutionary governments that France will go through in the next few years, and they take up the tennis court oath, which is basically they'll keep meeting until they have a fair constitution drawn up and they are governed by themselves and not a king. So they begin planning. This starts out with only being members of the third estate, but hatred for Louis grows in every area of France, and soon members of the nobility and clergy actually join in with the National Assembly. So of course, the revolution isn't going to get going with just people meeting and talking. They need manpower, which they have a lot of. Remember that 97% of the population third estate? They're gonna have pitchfork soon. So anger grows, of course, because everyone's starving and not having a all-around good time. So they decide to storm the Bastille, which is this prison fortress that contains gunpowder and weapons and, you know, all-around resources for them, as well as prisoners who were imprisoned just because they opposed the monarchy. So they freed the prisoners, they stole all this stuff. And this was a really big deal because this was this impenetrable fortress, and they tore it down. So that was the official start of the French Revolution. We're officially in it now, boys. July 14th, 1789. And now, July 14th is a national holiday in France. that's happening in Paris. And then in the countryside, they're destroying the nobles' property. And basically all over France, they're like, down with the system! So nobles are obviously getting pretty worried. They're getting their property ruined. And on August 4th, later that year, they surrender. They give up feudalism. They're like, okay, this is scary.
I choose life.
We're done. Yeah, we'll stop taking advantage of you. It was fun while it lasted, though, right? No? Okay. Okay. So feudalism is over, and later that month, the National Assembly passes the Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen, which is basically off rights for the French people, right to freedom of religion and speech, and equality, and it changes France from a monarchy into a constitutional monarchy. They're greatly limiting Louis's power, and making it so that he's going to have to do any ruling under the constitution that they've drawn up. And now we have the guillotine. You know that?
Yeah.
That old thing? Yeah, guillotine! Yeah!
Yeah!
So, Dr. Joseph Ignace Guillotin, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, was a member of the National Assembly, and he invented the guillotine in late 1789 as a way to make capital punishment more equal. At the time, executions happened in a number of different ways, and it varied based off of your social class. So nobles would be decapitated with a sword, you know. No one wants to be executed, but, you know, if you're going to be executed, clean break like that seems like the way to go. But peasants experienced many different forms of torture based off of the crime. But all in all, they were hung, burned at the stake. So Dr. Guillotin's end goal was to just end the death penalty, but before that could happen, he was like, okay, in the meantime, we're just gonna make it all around the board, everyone's gonna get guillotined, painless.
Cut off all their heads, every single one of them, and that's what they did.
Mm-hmm. And in a way, it worked out. You could look at it like that, his plan, meh. Lots of people died by guillotine, that's for sure. But the last person to be executed by guillotine in France was in 1977. So, like, 300 years after his time. So, I don't know. We'll leave that up to you whether you think his plan worked out. 2 years later, Louis and Marie try to flee their palace in Paris, where they'd been moved to from Versailles by the peasants, but they were captured, and people were like, okay, we gotta get on with them, you know? Austria and Prussia declare war on the revolutionary government in France. This is for a couple of reasons. I mean, first of all, they're both monarchies. Obviously, they want to protect that type of power in their areas. And then at the time, Austria's king was Marie's brother. So, yeah. But same guy, you know, the guy who... the whole thing, yeah. So, also around this time, political parties are starting to form in the National Assembly. We have the Republicans, who want France to be a republic, the monarchists, who want it to be a monarchy, and the Jacobins, led by Maximilien Robespierre, who was a lawyer, a statesman, and a revolutionary. In 1792, the palace is invaded and elections are forced for a new national convention to replace the government to replace the National Assembly as like a new governing body. They abolished the monarchy and they called for others to do the same. And in 1793, France declared a republic. Louis tried and executed, and 9 months later, Marie is executed as well. Woo! We did it, guys! Yeah!
Woo!
Woo! Now, you may be thinking, awesome, just got rid of those guys. They kind of sucked, huh? Kind of leached off the people. Weren't very good rulers, kind of unfeeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new age of prosperity in France. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a republic.
Mm-hmm.
Singing in the streets, let the hear. Mm-hmm. Les Mis, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-mm.
You would be wrong. If that's Mm-mm. what you thought, you'd be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Robespierre? He comes back in and he's like, hello. Uh-huh, he says hello.
I am indeed radicalized.
And in 1794, he's voted to be the head of the National Convention. And a month later, he takes away the public's right to fair trial and legal assistance. So, the incorruptible!
Sometimes you live to see yourself become the guy you hate.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Robespierre and his buddies start a whole lot of stuff that people don't like very much. They establish a completely new and kind of strange calendar.
Which is so bold, because can you imagine, like, after, like, being the revolution, and you're like, all right, let's just put in some weird stuff, like a new calendar. It's like, dude, you think, look,
there are clearly other things to do, like maybe rework French society, give equality. Nah, he went for the calendar. He was like,
And then he's like, no, I won't get rebelled against. Me.
This January, February, March, April thing ain't working out. We're going to do a new one. It's going to be completely different from everyone around us.
Robespierre 4.
So he makes a new calendar, and he eradicates Christianity.
The calendar isn't actually like that. Just FYI, it's not just Robespierre 1, it's like January.
It pretty much eradicated Christianity. I mean, they'd just gotten rid of the Catholic monarchy, they suppressed the church, and they took a lot of church property to purpose for other things. And for about 10 months, he just radically kills anyone suspected of being a counter-revolutionary. By the end, it's 70,000 people, which I don't understand.
Wait, 70,000?
17,000.
That was 17,000.
Which was pretty, kind of a lot for, like, France at that time, which wasn't very big.
Like, you know? Mad paranoid.
Yeah. Which I don't totally get that either, because it's like, I don't know, officially the French Revolution doesn't end until Robespierre does, spoiler alert, but I don't get why he kept going after counter-revolutionaries. Like, he's basically become a dictator, you know, got the new calendar, suppresses religion, takes away the public's right to, you know, I feel like he could have kind of said, okay, revolution's over, it's Robespierre time, baby. And, you know, but yeah, he got really paranoid. So yeah, so this goes on for 10 months until July of 1794, when Robespierre, along with Jacobins around him, are killed. They're guillotined. Yeah. So the reign of terror is over. Woo! Woo! It's gonna be awesome, right? Woo! No, come on, Katie. Get excited.
Yay! We're so excited. We're so
happy. It's probably gonna be really good now. Democracy.
Maybe this time, finally, we'll just have rights. Oh.
Yeah, Republic, nah. So, after he's dead, the National Convention approves a new constitution, but all of the executive power is in the hands of this 5-member directory. And Royalists and Jacobins and Republicans are all like, this seems like it's startlingly close to a dictatorship, guys. And, of course, they were suppressed. That suppression was led by a young and upcoming general named Napoleon Bonaparte.
That guy.
Short guy. Yeah, he's kind of short. He actually wasn't short by France's standards, or by the standards of that time period.
How tall is he? About, like, 5'8"?
Yeah, I think so. Let's look it short up. Short king. 5'6"? God.
5'6"? Ooh.
Yo, when I'm the same height as Napoleon, I guess. Ooh. I'm Napoleon.
I'm taller than Napoleon. Get owned, dude. Wrecked.
So, in 1799, Napoleon stages a coup d'etat and names himself France's new leader, and that's the official end to the French Revolution and the beginning of the Napoleonic era, which we can cover in a completely different episode. There's so much to go over there. He calls himself emperor. There's a lot of emperor rising that he does.
And French people really tried their best, but in the end, it just never worked out.
Yeah. So, but finally, in 1815, Napoleon is defeated. And now, you might be thinking again, is it going to get better? No.
Pain.
We hate to break it to you, but it doesn't work out that way. So, in 1815, he's defeated, and they put King Louis's brother, Louis XVIII, on the throne! You'd think, after they went through all of that trouble to decapitate the monarchs, decapitate the people who took over from that, exile the guy who took over from that, they might want to try something else out. But
they were just tired.
They were just tired.
You know what? They were like, you know what? Maybe that thing wasn't all that bad, considering.
Hey, let's go back to the original plan. Let's go back to the original plot of the movie. I don't like it here.
The fact that his name is Louis, too. Like, they really just could not change it. Like, in all those, like, 18 different, like, people. They're like, you know what? No, Louis. Like, you know what? If I was French, I would have wanted to take over that guy, too. Screw that guy, man. Honestly, his name's Louis. My bad if you're Louis listening to this, but, like, you don't have rights.
My God. Okay, so, of course, it was a lot more complicated than just they put him back on the throne because, or they put him on the throne because they were like, yeah, monarchy is going to work out again. It was a lot of political steps that led his rule to happen. And France was still very different. There was more liberty, and there was more, like, you know, the good stuff. It wasn't exactly the same. But I do think it's interesting that, you know, they started off the revolution with, let's get rid of the monarch! And then they ended it with,
you know, this Louis guy wasn't so bad.
Let's bring in his brother! So he and then his other brother, Louis XIX, rule until 1830 when they have the July revolutions. Woo, woo for July. Woo for revolutions in July. Yeah. Big win there for revolutions in July. Okay. That's it for this episode.
Oh, wow. That was the French Revolution, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, we hope you enjoyed that. If you did, like the episode on Podbean or whatever you're listening to it, comment, share it with your friends.
And if you made it this far, first of all, I'd like to give you a sincere apology.
Also, congratulations. We hope you're okay.
Yeah, I'd also like to, like, thank you.
Yeah.
That's cool. Cool. Pretty also, cool. If you're in AP World, I'm sorry.
Dude, we're really unfortunately sorry
for you. I'm sorry.
But, yeah, we hope you learned something or laughed, even if it was at us and not with us. If you liked it, like it, comment, share it with your friends, let us know that you enjoyed it so we can do more history episodes.
This episode was produced by me, Lycan Forster, and edited by Katie and I.
It was researched by Katie, but mostly Lycan, obviously. our executive producer is again Lycan, who created our music and cover art.
Pacific Cast is a part of the media made by Kaleo-Keikoa, Waiakea High School's official reporting source. Visit us at www.kaleokeikoa.weebly.com.
See you next time!